This is The Groove in the podcast studio. And again, marathon interviews with amazing people looking also at some incredible trends such as AI. What hasn't been about AI at Mao? I don't know. Heard it so much, but let's delve into what it really is, because if everyone is doing it, then no one is doing it. So Bob Hollanders, you're my guest. You are head of sales and account management, US EMEA, at Appier. And I have to say, also one of the very first companies in the space with some incredible, cred in your leadership. So AI is baked into your DNA. But again, as I said, everyone's doing it. So what does Appier do to be a little different?
Yeah. I think when I joined Appier 2 years ago, AI wasn't the buzzword that it was now. So I actually talked to a lot of my clients that I don't really pitch about AI in my decks, because the word has lost a little bit of its meaning. Like, you can't scroll past LinkedIn to see an AI post for like two, three messages. So that's a good and a bad thing, right? That the industry is kind of adopting it, learning about it, but also because it's a buzzword, it loses its value a little bit. And the cool thing about Appier is we were ahead of that curve. Like, we've been named by Forbes as one of the top 50 AI companies. So it's really in our DNA.
And been around since when, actually?
12 years.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So before it was cool.
Before it was cool, before NFTs, before all the other buzzwords. So for us, it is something that we want to talk about, but we also have to be careful how we talk about it, because we don't want to kind of fall into the same trap like a lot of, I don't want to blame, but a lot of other companies that use it as a buzzword.
It's hot.
It's very hot. So for us, what it means, I think for myself, I'm not a product person, so I'm definitely not the best person to fully explain how it works. But for us, it's about learning. Like, AI is what it makes it special is that it can adopt something and then learn from it and make it better. So how you can adopt that is in your data processing. Easy example is, if Wednesday is a day where a lot of your users see a lot of growth, maybe a machine learning will say every Wednesday is good, but it could be that that Wednesday had a specific action or event going in your app, and it doesn't occur every Wednesday. So, but it had a specific time. So what AI should do is actually learn from why was that Wednesday different from another Wednesday and adopt it. And is this Wednesday going to come up again? And I think that's where AI can be powerful. It can kind of learn different contextual behaviors and adopt it in future actions for marketers.
Most are focused on either process or creative.
Yeah.
Some companies are seeing it, you know, it's forecasting for the whole company as well. You know, it's about everything. It's about all the decision making around growth and also around retention. So it's like life cycle, it's everything.
Right.
But you can't be everything. But help me understand here where you begin and end, because it's more than creative optimization with Appier.
Definitely.
Much more than that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's in our algorithm. That's where we try to make sure that we still have a lot of people working on the algorithm, but we try to feed it as much as possible so that it kind of becomes independent. And then it becomes scalable and becomes easier to do multiple things across complex problems. So we try to make sure that it is a system that keeps learning and every time grows from that. And I think that's the thing that can be in your UA, but also can be in your DMP. It can be in any process that you have, but we just have a couple of systems or algorithms, AI algorithms, that we can adapt to different situations.
And there are your own IP.
Own IP, like proprietary tech. And like, as you mentioned, our founding team all went to these fancy schools and even made robotic dogs, right? That's what a lot of people think when you talk about AI, but that's where their experience comes from. Yeah. And I think that that kind of translates, they moved into gaming, marketing, MarTech, and I kind of used that robotic dog, and how can we implement that into being beneficial for marketers.
Marketers, I love interviewing them. I interview like five a week, and it's so exciting, because if you want to talk to people on the edge, you talk to marketers because they're taking problems and they're tinkering and they're stretching, you know, probabilistic models. They're constantly pushing the boundary because they have to. Yeah. It's their job. They have targets to hit.
Yeah.
So amongst all your customers and the companies you're working with, give me an idea of like the coolest way to stretch what AI was meant to do and how they're doing what they're doing. Because I think those are the exciting lessons.
Yeah, sure. So you're asking about which marketers are like kind of the they push
from
the
what
boundaries?
You're seeing, because you're working with the marketers. Yeah, you know, sure. You're in sales, so you're closer to that.
Yeah, sure.
You don't have to worry about the product, but what they're doing with the product, that's interesting.
The marketers that we love to work with embody kind of the unknown, and giving kind of giving themselves to our products. We see a lot of success when marketers are completely opening up, allowing their data to kind of be part of what we do. The more you share with us, the more data
the smarter
we have.
It gets,
right? If you do market research, right? If you ask 100 people a question, you'll get a response that's maybe accurate. If you ask 1,000 people a question, you get a more accurate response. But if you ask 100,000 people a question, the response will be very accurate for the population or the question that you ask. The same works with data for AI. Whenever they are able to share more with us, our decision-making trees that the system makes become more accurate because they have more lessons to learn. And every time when they make a decision, fail or success, they adopt that. Mm-hmm. And if you do that on smaller sets of data, it becomes more challenging and it's not as profitable. So the marketers that we see the most success with, of course, we have a good understanding of how it works and like what the risks are. But they kind of give away to...
Okay, so they share the data with you. Yeah. But what do they achieve when they share the data with you? What are some of the cooler things they are working on?
Sure.
Because it's not just about optimizing. I think it's about innovating.
Right. Yeah, so they're able to use that forecasting and results in real time back to their own systems as well. It kind of can go beyond to just a campaign data, but it can be connected to maybe a creative engine and kind of use that all in a loop. Something that we're working on is we also do a lot of generative AI. So generative AI is like you get a bank of images, you have your core images, you let the system create something new. But what if we use that and also copy that to creative analytics? So you let the system look at, hey, these are creatives that are working. What if we connect it to the creative side of things and let actually the results and the analytics of the data side make it also that they can directly produce into generative AI creatives. So you're combining those things. And I think those kind of examples where they're kind of daring to go beyond one isolated system, but connected to multiple systems, that's where you see a lot of success. But to be honest, it is very difficult. Because a lot of them work with different third parties on, so you have to go through a lot of layers on, you know, how does everybody feel okay with it? A lot of legal, and that can slow things down. So I think as this becomes more of a thing, flexibility and understanding of what it does. We even had some companies that, you know, because we had AI in our legal documentation, they didn't want to sign because they found they didn't understand it. It was not a thing that the company actually adopted. So. That's kind of on the other side of things, like where you see like, oh, if we have
it. It's the same with all technologies and everything. There's this idea of, yes, we can use it, but how are we using it? And where does that fit in the company? So everyone sort of has a say.
Exactly.
It's about how the company works, basically, because it's that ingrained in the company. You're working with gaming apps, because I've spoken with a few as well, but everyone is looking at the similarities and how they can get more and more into non-gaming, because the things that gaming apps did really well, non-gaming apps are really starting to grasp. And there's some things that non-gaming apps do that are really amazing, like they fully understand engagement. Tell me about the way you're working with the two of them, or are there verticals that you see are really understanding this, bringing that ability, those capabilities to non-gaming apps, and how that's catching on?
That's a good question. I think we work with a good portfolio of non-gaming apps as well, and we definitely see the difference between how marketers look at UA or growth from a gaming perspective and non-gaming. Depends a little bit on the marketer that's on either side, but they're I think less adoptive of like the different data points that you can achieve. So we're really training with them, like, hey, let's say a food delivery app, right? If you're trying to get somebody to sign up for your monthly subscription, or you just want them to order frequently, what are different things in that process for that user that enhance that, right? With gaming, you say, hey, we need to get a retention level of 40%. We need to hit level X or Y. And even if the user doesn't make a payment or is the action that we want. Other metrics in that flow can actually show that the user might come at a later point. Trying to make sure that we visualize them, visualize to the non-gaming apps, like, hey, what are touch points that you're not looking at that we actually see are connected to your main KPIs? And how can we help you kind of figure out how to play in on those? Because it can also be an audience that doesn't necessarily directly relate to your KPI, but can be an audience that's very valuable to your app.
So they're very similar.
Similar.
To your target audience.
Yeah, exactly.
And pick up on those.
Exactly.
I'm hearing a lot about that because, of course, the similar audiences are slightly cheaper. They're similar.
Yeah,
they're similar enough that they're going to eventually be valuable, but you're sort of getting them
A different spot at a cheaper price, right? Then especially if they don't result in direct return of investment, having that at a cheap price is
but they're an investment.
They're an investment, yeah. Because you need daily active users, you need monthly active users to keep your app going. Yeah. Also for their side, for the product side, like how are people using the app, how you can improve it. And if you only have a sample size of the paying users that you're focusing on, you're missing out on a potential audience that you know can bring you a lot of added value.
So what's a touch point they're missing?
Well, like everybody's different. I think it's just their focus. Like gaming apps.
So they're like looking at events rather than
Branding is a lot more important as well, right? Like mobile gaming has always been a lot about lower funnel. There's a lot of companies that do TV ads as they've kind of reached out their audience and they're figuring out like actually TV branding is a big uplift. I had some conversations yesterday. They say, hey, we invest X amount in TV,
CTV,
and we see an immense increase. And that's what the non-gaming apps have been doing or have teams with.
Because it all counts. And then you are omnichannel, right,
with
Appier. So you're saying, this is what you're doing in mobile, this is what you're doing in web, this is CTV, this is how it all works
together. Exactly,
yeah. Stitching that together.
So I feel like they're crossing. Like the non-gaming apps are looking more at deeper funnel, hardcore performance.
Yeah.
And the gaming apps are actually looking at, like, how can we utilize brand? And I think
it's true, though.
They should marry each other, right? That's what they should do, because they both help. And every app is different. And I think that's also something that, this sounds maybe strange, but we necessarily don't onboard every app directly. We really look at, hey, can we make you successful? I'm very open on what are our current capabilities, what are things that we're strengthened, and we have a conversation with either app to see if we can fill that need that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're looking in such a specific need that we're like, hey, let's wait for a minute. I think we can really be beneficial a little bit more down the line where you have X or Y. Because I think that's also good for companies like us to focus on your strength and really try to bring incrementality versus just trying to work with everybody, because then you kind of set yourself up for more failure than you should make.
One learning also that's interesting, because we're talking about the crossover gaming, non-gaming, and how they're learning from each other.
Right.
And so I'm talking to some of them and they're saying, you know, in gaming, you can survive on having 2-3%
of your,
audience pay. Tell that to a commerce company.
Yeah,
they'd be fired, right?
Yeah.
So they're masters at finding the whales, that 2-3%. So there are a lot of people that say that what commerce apps and every other non-gaming app needs to understand is how to find their whales.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if they could find their 2-3%,
that
is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And that would be your repeat purchases. It would be the people who spend a ton. So is there a pre-indicator of a whale that you can share?
Oh, wow. Non-gaming whale. Yeah.
Whale. That could be something.
That could be something. I think those are definitely the white whales. They're rarely seen.
Forget the unicorns.
Yeah. Forget the unicorns. I think that's actually a good question. You know, actually bringing me to an idea that I will send a message to my product team about this. But I think it's inherent to gaming. I think for non-gaming, it depends on the apps, right? I think what you mentioned, if the app facilitates multiple purchases, then you can definitely look at somebody in food delivery that orders 4 or 5 times a week, right? That's a power user of that app, right? And that could be considered as a whale. And how can we find more of those? And how can we make a champion of those users? How can we actually also, you know, in gaming, you have VIP users, users that, you know, get exclusive access to support teams. Exactly. How can you look at those users and figure out how can you make them champions for your app? How can you learn from them and keep them engaged? And I think that's early indicators. Yeah, I think that's definitely on like user behavior that you can like look back at, hey, this is a power user. What did they do in the first week in terms of steps that they took?
So and then learn from that.
And learn from
system.
That. Yeah, yeah.
So I think we have another date, Bob. When you talk product, you find out how to find those white whales. You come back, we will chat
idea.
Again.
Yeah, you definitely.
And if I give you a product idea, I'll
make sure we sign it to you. Yeah, yeah.
You're on. I'll take you up on that. Yeah. But Bob, delightful, and I love it because straightforward. You know, the no BS discussion of what to do, how to do it.
Cool.
How can you lose on that? So thanks so much,
Bob.
It was a pleasure.
Definitely
to speak
for
with
me
you.
Too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cool.